Jeroboam was the first king of the northern kingdom of Israel, also known as the kingdom of Samaria. He worshipped idols. Jeroboam's successor was his son Nadab, who was known only for leading our people into idolatry. Nadab was killed and succeeded by Baasha. Baasha was known for killing all of the relatives of Jeroboam, the first king. Unfortunately, Baasha ended up in the same detestable idolatrous practices of Jeroboam. Am I going too fast? I'm only getting started.
All of the kings of Israel's northern kingdom led their people into worship of idols and false gods. Despite the efforts of prophets like Elijah, the people would not repent and turn to God.
Where was I? Oh, Baasha. Baasha's son, Elah, succeeded him as king. He was killed while drunk by his successor Zimri, and Zimri destroyed all of the male relatives of Baasha because they too were idolaters. Zimri was king for only 7 days before the army rebelled against him. Zimri set the palace on fire and committed suicide. He was also an idolater. Now, the sixth king of the northern kingdom was Omri. He is known for buying the hill of Samaria and building a city, also named Samaria, on it. He also led the people into idolatry. Those are the first six kings of the northern kingdom, and all of them were evil in the Lord's sight because of their idolatrous ways. The seventh king was worse than any of them. I should know. I am Ahab, that seventh king. About a half century after the death of Solomon, I took what you call evil to a new level in the northern kingdom. I not only committed the same sins as the first six kings, but I married the evil Jezebel. I began to serve and worship Baal, and I built a temple to Baal. I also built an Asherah pole. My reign was close to a century after David had completely dominated the countries surrounding Israel, including Aram. During the weakness of Israel since then, Aram had recovered in strength. Ben-Hadad, the king of Aram, allied himself with 32 other kings and attacked the northern kingdom of Israel. Although I was ready to partially surrender, he wanted total surrender. Oh, God, and the people urged me not to do so. And eventually, God led my country to defeat Aram twice. However, when I made peace with Aram against God's direction, my destruction was assured.
Three things. A maniacal king had been searching furiously for me in all the kingdoms and nations. His psychopath queen was killing the prophets of the Lord as fast as she could find them. And a servant of the Lord, who had been hiding 100 prophets in caves, giving them food and water, was stressed, hanging on a thread of his last nerve. It's good times. I may be the person most people think of when they think of the first prophet in the era of kings. I mean, Samuel and Nathan were prophets, great prophets. But I'm usually the choice for the classic prophet zero guy for people today. Maybe because I was with Jesus on the Mount of Transfiguration. Cool. Perhaps it is because the Lord endowed me with such power. Again, cool. Or because I'm one of the few people who never died. Very cool, when you really think about it. The first time I'm referred to in the Bible was in the time of the aforementioned king, Ahab, when I announced a multi-year drought. This made me so unpopular that the Lord told me to go hide in the Kerith Ravine east of the Jordan River a few miles. It was in the region of my hometown of Tishbe I knew exactly where to hide. Every morning and every evening, I drank from the brook, and ravens brought me bread and meat tea. It was awesome. The brook eventually dried up due to the drought, so the Lord sent me north of the Northern Kingdom to Sidon. I met a widow and her son there. It's so very poor. They took their very last bit of flour and oil and fed me. Such a sacrifice. What an honor to God. Because of their kindness, the Lord moved. Miraculously moved. Their jar of flour and their jug of oil remained full until the drought was over. It never ran out. What a miracle for her and for her neighbors to see. And then one day her son died. The Lord was gracious, both to her and to me. I brought the boy back to life. The Lord allowed me to bring the boy back to life. This gave me a good reputation, and it helped me understand the power of God. The words of the widow. Now I know that you are a man of God, and that the word of the Lord from you is true. I couldn't help it. Everything I said from the Lord was true. Moving on. So more than 2 years of drought went by. Ahab and his chief administrator, Obadiah, were scouring the land to find grass to keep their animals alive. God told me to go to King Ahab and to inform him that God would break the drought and send rain. I came upon Obadiah, and he bowed down to me. He recognized me. This is where I learned those three things: the maniacal king, his psycho wife, and Obadiah's prophets. One, crazy King Ahab was combing the entire region for me. I suppose he thought he could coerce me into breaking the drought. Two, Queen Jezebel was murdering prophets. And three, Obadiah, who worked for Ahab, also happened to be a servant of the Lord. Now you could see why he was stressed out. His God and his boss didn't really see eye to eye. Probably some of you know what that's like. And the stress was getting to him. I mean, it was obvious. But when I told him to go to King Ahab and tell him that I would appear in person, I didn't expect him to snap. No, I didn't expect it at all. Obadiah went ballistic. He was like, he worried that as soon as he told Ahab that I would appear, I would disappear again. If that happened, Obadiah knew he would 100% be put to death. I mean, in fact, he might even be put to death just for telling Ahab that I would appear. Ahab, erratic is an understatement. However, Obadiah did tell Ahab, and Ahab did come to meet me. We met. Ahab accused me of causing trouble for Israel. I accused him of the same thing. I told him that he had deeply troubled Israel by abandoning the Lord and leading the people into worshiping false gods. I commanded him to bring the people of Israel to Mount Carmel, along with Jezebel's 450 prophets of Baal and 400 prophets of Asherah. So, Ahab assembled the people and prophets and met me on Mount Carmel. He was desperate for the drought to be broken, if I do say so myself. I challenged the people to make a choice. If the Lord is God, follow him, I said. If Baal is God, follow him. I threw down a challenge. The one who met the challenge by fire is the true God. The people agreed to the challenge and the outcome. The future of Israel hung in the balance. But I knew which way the balance would tip. I had the people bring two bulls, of which I let the prophets of Baal choose one. The prophets of Baal cut up their bull and put it on a pile of wood. They didn't set fire to the wood. That was the job of their God. And the prophets of Baal shouted to Baal from morning until noon. Shouted and shouted and danced around the altar. No answer. I taunted them. Shout louder in case your God is asleep or traveling. They shouted louder, danced harder, slashed themselves with swords, bleeding. They went on like this until evening, but silence. That was all they got. It was my turn. The people came to me, and I repaired the altar of the Lord that had 12 stones, one for each tribe. I dug a large trench around the altar, arranged the wood on the altar, and placed the pieces of the bull on it. I had the people fill 4 large jars with water and pour it on the offering and the wood. I had them do it again, and a third time. The wood was soaked. The trench was filled with water. Now, at this point, you might not think the people were too engaged, but if so, you have forgotten that we were on top of a mountain. And there had been a drought for more than 2 years. So 3 times, they had to carry these 4 massive stone jars down the mountain, fill them up with any water they could find, travel back, climb up the mountain carrying these 4 massive stone jars. All is in place. Challenge set. Here we go. I pray to the God of Israel loud enough that all the people can hear. I'm a prophet. I'm loud. I ask him to send fire so that everyone knows he is the one true God and that I am his servant. Fire falls from heaven. It totally burns up the sacrifice, wood, stone, soil, and water in the trench. I mean, just gone. God responds immediately. When the people see this, they cry, "The Lord, he is God. The Lord, he is God." I command the people, seize the false prophets. They take them to the Kishon Valley and slaughter them. I tell Ahab to eat and drink because I hear the sound of rain. The sky, still dry and clear as it had been for over 2 years. I pray to God. Small cloud appears in the west toward the Mediterranean Sea. I tell my servant to warn Ahab to start riding in his chariot to Jezreel before the rain stops him. Ahab is skeptical. The sky is clear, but he is still in awe of my power, so he does as I command. The sky turns dark. A heavy rain begins to fall. The power of the Lord comes over me, and I tuck my cloak in my belt, and I run ahead of Ahab 15 miles to Jezreel. 15 miles. That was a long way then, too. Awaiting us in Jezreel is the nefarious Queen Jezebel, who is sure to be furious that her false prophets are dead and her gods have lost all stature. It happens. The minute Ahab told Jezebel what had happened, she sent a messenger to me saying that she would kill me within 24 hours. After what happened at Carmel, you can bet that I reacted with a righteous anger and full trust in God. But if you made that bet, you'd be sorely disappointed. Your psychologist today might even diagnose me as schizophrenic. I freaked out. I mean, scared, witless. I ran for my life. I ran over 100 miles to Beersheba, and another day passed there into the bleak wilderness. I laid down under a juniper bush and prayed to die. Afraid, exhausted, and frustrated. God answered me by sending an angel to feed me and give me water. The angel did this again, and I was refreshed enough to begin a 40-day journey to Mount Horeb, the mountain of God. When I arrived there, I entered a cave and spent the night, and the word of God came to me. Oh, I told God all about how zealous I had been for him, that the Israelites were killing the prophets, and I was the only one left. I was a real whiner. God told me, get out of the cave and be ready to be in his presence. A violent wind came. No, Lord. An earthquake came. No, Lord. A fire came. Still, no, Lord. And then a whisper. A gentle whisper came. And the Lord was in it. The Lord informed me that he had reserved 7,000 in Israel for himself, and that I was to anoint Jehu as the next king of Israel, and Elisha as my successor. So my life ended with 3 things. I anointed King Jehu. I trained Elisha and continued to be the most powerful prophet in Israel. And the third, at the end of my days, I didn't die a normal death. Instead, The Lord was gracious, and in truly unforgettable prophet style, he took me, Elijah, to heaven in a whirlwind.
Elijah declared that because Queen Jezebel and I continued to do evil deeds and lead the people into idolatry, we would both be destroyed. The dogs would lick up her blood. I was killed in war. Jezebel wasn't so lucky. Some of her eunuchs betrayed her and hurled her to her death from the palace window. While they waited to decide what to do with her next, dogs devoured her body, except for her skull, hands, and feet. Grisly. There was no possibility to bury her in such a way as to honor her. And once again, Elijah's prophecies came true. I was the seventh king of the northern kingdom of Israel, and all seven of us were evil because we continued to lead the people of Israel further and further into the worship of other gods and away from the worship of the true God. The great prophet of God, Elijah. His time was over. Was there anyone who could take his place and lead the people back to God?